Hastings, and tonight we've got what I hear will be a great speaker. Please join me in welcoming Aris from the Bayside Sharing Today Home Group.
Good evening, everybody. My name's Aris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Aris.
When I was in a rehab, this guy came up and he said, don't drink, go to meetings, and die. And I was like, what the hell? I thought the whole point was don't drink and go to meetings, you know? And I'll get into that in a minute, but I don't do the whole drunk-a-log thing, but I really need to tell you a little bit about my childhood growing up, because it was full of fear and insecurity, and that's what led to me finding alcohol. I remember as early when I was a kid, I was a little different than the other kids. I grew up in a middle-class neighborhood, but we were the poorest people in it. You know, my parents wanted a better life for me and my brothers, so they moved to this a nice town on Long Island. But my father was a hairdresser. We really couldn't afford to live in that kind of neighborhood. Well, we could afford to buy a house there, but, you know, keeping up with the other kids and the lifestyle that they lived was impossible for my parents. But they really wanted better things for us, so that's why we did it. And, growing up, I realized really quick, my friends had nicer clothes than me. I had hand-me-down clothes from my cousins and stuff like that, and my sneakers, they stayed on until they fell off, and other kids had brand new stuff all the time. But my friends never made fun of me. They never said anything bad, and whenever they went out and they were like, hey, we're gonna go down and get some pizza, and I was like, I really can't. Nah, come on, Ori, come with us, I got money. My father gave me money. My friends were they didn't care. Their parents gave them money, and they just pay for everybody, so it was good in that effect. That being said, as a kid, if my friends wanted to do something, I always did it with them. Especially if it was not, if it wasn't, if it was something like stealing or doing something illegal, they're like, come on, let's go do this. And I was like, I was not the guy who said, we're not gonna do that. Let's not do that, that's not right. They wanted to do it. They were always so cool to me. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be part of that group. I just did it. I remember a friend of mine came to my house with this red gas can that you used to hook up to an outboard engine. And he's like, come on, come with me. We're going to go steal this guy's boat. I need this engine. So he just went down to the marina, hooked up to the outboard, started it up, untied the boat, and took off. And I was just like, oh, that was easy. That was no problem, I started doing illegal stuff early in my childhood, but I wanted to fit in, but I was just so, there was something inside of me that was just, I was so insecure, I was so full of fear, and I didn't know how to get around it, and it was like that, just sitting in class or just sitting with my friends. I didn't want anyone to notice that I was afraid. And then one day, we were in my friend's basement, and his father had cases of beer, and it was warm beer. And he's like, come on, we're gonna drink a couple of these beers, and you're gonna feel better, and this and that. And sure enough, I took that first sip, and it was disgusting. Warm Schlitz beer in the basement of my friend's house. It was nasty. But you know what? After four or five sips, it started tasting a little better. And all of a sudden, I started feeling better. All of a sudden, I started feeling great. I was like, my God, this is the answer right here, I just got a little buzz on, But then, because I was young, I didn't know what a little buzz was. I just kept drinking and drinking, and next thing I know, I was puking or whatever, and I didn't know how to control my drink at all. Not from the beginning. I didn't know how to, as long as there was something to drink, I was drinking it, It could be 5 seconds before I had to go home. It wouldn't matter. I was still going to drink. So those are the things I did as a kid, but I felt better. I felt okay. That wool, itchy sweater that I felt like I was so uncomfortable in my own skin, that alcohol just made it go away. So That's what made me feel good, family feel better. But, you know, as I got older, I was introduced to other stuff. I know this is AA, it's not a drug thing, but, you know, I got involved in a lot of other stuff. Not just, you know, smoking pot and doing drugs, but also selling drugs, because that's a part of my story, too. So I was a really, and then what happened was for me, you know, when you're doing all these things now, you think you're a little invincible, because now you have money, now you're a little bit, you know, things are better, you know, worse, but you don't think they're worse, because, you know, things are going your way. You've got a lot of friends, you've got a lot of girls, you got all these things, and you got, you know, material things. So you start to, you have money to buy stuff, you know, in the beginning. That all ends because you can't stop drinking and making bad decisions, you know. When you're drinking and you're drugging, you're constantly making bad decisions that cost you money, cost you, you know, like I used to say, when I wake up in the morning, if I don't have a new dent in my car, that was a good night, you know. A bad night is, you know, I don't know where my car is, or my neighbor's banging on my door saying, hey, can you move your freaking car out of my driveway so I can get to work? And I'm giving him a hard time. Like, it's 6 o'clock in the morning and you're banging on my door. I'm like, yeah, my car is in his driveway. Like, you don't think that that's normal? Like, you know, so for me, you know, like, it was all about me. You know, it was all about me, and I didn't give a crap about you or anyone else around. My friends can come and beep their horn at 3 o'clock in the morning and wake me up so we can go out. And I didn't care if the neighbors woke up. I didn't care about nothing, you know. My poor mother, we put her through hell as kids, me and my brothers. We were all pretty much in the same boat growing up. So when you're still living at home and you're in high school, drinking and drugging is not that big of a deal. So what happens is, for me, is, you know, now we graduate. Now I did a couple of years of college. That's over. But now I'm still living at home. Still living at home because I can't keep a job, because it requires you to go to sleep once in a while so you can, like, do your job, you know, during the day. So even after college, you know, my go-to job was usually working in the restaurant business, because it's something that I knew how to do, and it was easy. And, you know, it didn't require me to sleep, and I can go, like, you know, without sleep and do the job. And I remember, you know, in my early, like, my early 20s, I would go home at night, and I would start drinking, and then that would lead to drugs, and then that would lead to the rationalization in my head would be something like, all right, don't worry, you're still going to get 6 hours of sleep. Then it's down to 4 hours of sleep. Then it's down to, all right, listen, we can't go to sleep, because if you go to sleep right now, you're going to be late for work, because you're not going to wake up in time. And by what I mean by time is, like, I had to be at work at like 11 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, the birds already started chirping, the sun came up, I'm still up, and I would get into the shower, and I always used to say, oh God, please, if I could just get through this day, I swear to God, this is it, this is the last time, I promise. And, like, I would sit there, and the water would be on me, and I was just trying to just get, and I'm still, like, kind of high, I'm a little wired, and I'm thinking to myself, Jesus Christ, I just gotta do this thing. And then I get to work, and then a couple of hours into the day, now I'm freaking exhausted. I am so exhausted because now I've come down completely, and I'm doing this job, and I'm exhausted. But come, like, 8, 9 o'clock at night, because now I get off at, like, 11 o'clock at night, 8, 9 o'clock at night, all of a sudden, I wake up. I wake up out of a coma, and I'm ready to go again. Forget the fact that I haven't slept for, like, 2 days. But for some reason, I'm ready to go. And I forgot all about the shower, praying to God, thanking him for all this stuff. Please, God, please, oh, please just get me through this day. He got me through the day, and I freaking reneged on the deal, and I went out, and I did it again. So I did this for a long time. There were some stints of dry time, I call it. Like, I remember I went. I was dating this girl, and then she lived in Florida. So I moved to Florida with her, And because I was like locked in our house, I couldn't be the way I was. Yeah, I could drink once in a while, but I wasn't able to really do what I was doing. So I was kind of miserable. It was like a miserable relationship. And I put that on for like 4 years. Yeah, I drank and I did a little bit, you know, other things. But for the most part, I was able, you know, because I was kind of like, you know, I was kind of like chained to that house. I wasn't able to do what I was doing. So there was stints of, I'm not going to call them sober times, but less crazy times. So I pulled that off. But now I'm getting older, you know. So now I'm 26, 27, 28 years old. That relationship was over. Had nothing to do with her. It was all me. And you know, one thing I remember is one day I was hanging out with her. Got up in the morning and we're doing some stuff. I was so irritated because I just wanted a couple of drinks, or I wanted to smoke a joint. I wanted to feel a little high. I didn't care what it was. And I gotta stop by the pizza place. So I went by the pizza place. I was working at this place in Boca Raton. And I went in the back and the guys are like, yo, I'm gonna go outside, smoke a joint. I went out there, took a couple of hits. I felt so much better. I got back in the car, and she even said, oh, you know, all of a sudden you're like so nice. I was like, yeah, because, you know, I didn't tell her why, but I was thinking to myself, yeah, because, you know, now I got a buzz. Now I feel okay. The medicine has kicked in, you know. The problem with the medicine is you always have to stay on the medicine. The medicine doesn't, you know, it's not one of those things I could take, like, you know, twice a day or something like that. I got to always be drunk or drinking or something, because I don't feel comfortable in my own skin. So that's, to me, that's what alcoholism is. You know, a lot of people talk about alcoholism is about alcohol. I personally feel like alcoholism has nothing to do with alcohol. It has to do with the fact that I don't give a crap what drug you pick to make you comfortable in your own skin. You pick that, and that's the thing that eventually takes you out, you know. And some people have the ability, like me, to use harder stuff that brought me in here probably sooner than if I would have took something that I could have managed a little while longer. So I'm grateful for that. So I moved back to New York. Now, like I said, I'm a little older. I'm still living in my parents' house. I'm actually living in the room I grew up with as a kid. You know, I still got the models that I glued together when I was like 9 years old sitting on the shelf. And now I'm feeling like a real loser because everyone else grew up. They got married. They started having kids. They bought houses. I'm living in my parents' house. And I'm using that excuse when I meet them. Oh, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. I'm still in Seaford and I'm still living, you know, with my parents. I'm kind of taking care of them. I wasn't taking care of crap. My mother was doing my laundry. You know, everything was getting taken care of. The only thing I had to do was go to work and pay for whatever I needed to spend money on. Everything else was taken care of. So, you know, I'm not going to say my parents enabled me, but they kind of like made it easier for me to live the life I wanted to live for a little longer. So, but at the same time, you know, there were those times when I was at home and I was sitting in my house and I was like staring at the ceiling or looking at the wall, and I'm in that room. You're such a freaking loser. Now you're like 30 years old. Or I was like, I was about to become like 30 years old at the time. And I had this friend, like the only people I hung out with were people like me that lived at home with their parents and wanted a party. You know, so those are the 4 or 5 people that I grew up with, like, you know, that were still in the neighborhood, that were around the same age, that, you know, when I hung out with them, I felt okay because, you know, we all were in the same boat. So it wasn't like nobody was better than each other. We were all doing the same thing, and nobody felt bad. But when I used to go home at night, I used to feel that way, you know. And I used to sit up until like the sun came up, you know, and keep drinking or drugging or whatever. And I remember, like I said, I grew up on Long Island, so there was this rehab out in the Hamptons called Seafield at the time. I don't know if it's still there, but the commercial used to come on, so I used to watch The Honeymooners, then Star Trek, then Twilight Zone. They used to come on in that order. That's how crazy it is. I still remember it. I think somewhere in the Star Trek sitcom episode, all of a sudden the commercial would come on and the guy would be like, why are you still up? Are you high? You drunk? You want to help yourself? Call this number. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, because I'm high and I'm drunk and I'm sitting on my bed or I'm peeking out the window thinking the cops are outside or whatever the hell's going on. And so after a while, because the car marshal came on every time, it was like a clock went off in my head. I'd be like, oh my God, change the channel quick. So I would change it to like for like 10 minutes and then change it back, you know, because I didn't want to hear this guy. Because he was right, man. That's what exactly what I'm doing. He's talking at me through the TV, you know. And so I did that for a while. And sometimes I disappeared for like 3 days. I had a friend of mine. He was like my running partner. His name is Andrew. And he eventually passed away. But before he did, he got a lawsuit settlement. So we would go for like 3 days on these runs. We used to call them runs. And we'd come back like 3 days later, and my mother would be like, where the hell were you? You've been gone for 3 days. I'd be like, oh, me and Andrew went to Atlantic City, or we went here, we went there. And so like, oh yeah, well, you know, you should have called. I'm like, all right, well, I'm home, you know, whatever. So then my Aunt Cleo dies. And I wasn't like close with her, but all my relatives were coming into town because there was gonna be a funeral. And this was on Friday or Saturday that they were gonna have the funeral. Or the wake, and then Sunday was the funeral. And I decide that I'm going to go on a run with my friend. So now it's like Sunday afternoon, and I'm driving back. I was in Brooklyn for like 3 days, you know, getting high and drinking. And so now it's Sunday, and I'm driving back from Brooklyn. It's about a 20-minute ride back to Long Island. And I'm like, I can't use the Atlantic City excuse. Because my aunt died, I blew off her funeral, you know? So what am I gonna say? Like, I just couldn't come up with an answer. I'm like, I gotta figure it out. So as I'm driving back, couldn't, I was drawing a blank. He was like, I can't use any of my bullshit excuses for this. I can't say I blew this off for whatever reason. You know, it had to be something good. So I figured I'd come up with something, and I couldn't. So I walked up to the house. I opened the door, my mother's sitting in the kitchen, and I just looked at her, I'm like, you know what, I need help. And she's like, oh, thank God, we know, you need help. And it's like, I really didn't want help, I just didn't have another excuse, you know? So my mother's like, I have this place, it's in Plainview, it's a rehab, and we're gonna call, we're gonna talk to them. So I did, and then I talked to the girl, and she's like, we can get you in tomorrow. I'm like, oh my God, this sucks. But I had no way out of it, you know. Went to this rehab. The first night, they didn't have a bed for me, so they put me up in this room, and there was a big, long shelf next to the window, but there was no, like, curtains or anything, so I could see the moonlight shining through. They gave me, like, a pillow and, like a pad to sleep on that night. And I was just thinking to myself as I'm laying there, your life has come to this, man. You're freaking in a rehab. You're 32 years old or whatever the hell I am. And I'm like, I had nothing, you know. My brothers had all moved on. One got married. The other one had his own place. You know, everyone I know is done. I mean, I was at the bottom, you know. I was just like, this sucks. I was so mad. Biggest thing I felt like, you know, before I got into this program, I was like, why the hell can't you just stop? Like, I couldn't stop, you know, that my brain was going nonstop, you know, I just couldn't stop. I would rationalize everything in my life, you know. I'd rationalize it at the night, but in the morning, I'd come back to reality and realize that it was all bullshit. So I'm in this rehab, and I thought when I went to rehab, you know, it was going to be like a classroom, and there's a guy with a whiteboard, and he's going to tell me how to not drink, or how not to, you know, get high, or how to control it. But it was just a bunch of AA meetings from morning to night. You know, so it's like one and then a couple of during the day and then the guy who came in and spoke. Have like outside people come in and speak. And I did that for 6 weeks. And I wasn't perfect. I'm going to be quite honest with you. I hooked up with the bad people. This guy's like, listen, my girlfriend's going to bring some weed and she's going to stuff it behind the dumpster and we're going to go get high. And I'm like, count me in. You know, and that kind of stuff. So I wasn't, and then I had this counselor come up to me. She goes, you know, all as counselors, you know, we're all ex-drug addicts and alcoholics. You know that, right? I'm like, yeah. She goes, so if, like, you were, like, smoking weed, you know, we would know. I'm like, yeah. She goes, well, I'm just going to let you know, if we see anything like that again, we're going to kick you out. So I was like, shit, I can't get kicked out of here. So he ended up getting kicked out, thank God, because I don't think I would have said no to him. He got kicked out for something else. But so then I finished my rehab. I went home, and I stayed. So I started going to meetings with another guy that I knew from high school, happened to be in the rehab with me. And we started going to meetings together. And I did that for about 4 months. I got a sponsor, which I didn't want to get a sponsor. The whole sponsor thing was freaking weird. I didn't like it. I didn't know why you were forcing me. Like, do you have a sponsor yet? I'm like, hey, why don't you worry about your own shit? You don't need to worry about if I have a sponsor. You really need a sponsor. I'm like, I don't know why. Because I come to the meeting, I hear some stuff, and I go home. I come back the next day. You need a commitment. You need a sponsor. And you guys are freaking really pissing me off. So, you know, the thing about sponsorship is, not only did I not want a sponsor, I did not know why you wanted to be my sponsor. I used to be like, you got nothing better to do than sit by the phone and wait for me to call you? Like, that, like, it didn't make any sense to me. Like, so I didn't want a sponsor. So then this old guy used to smoke like 500 cigarettes. I mean, he was, back then, they used to smoke in the meeting. It was like, you know, crazy. And anyway, I smoke too. So it wasn't like, I wasn't like judging him smoking. I said, listen, man, I'm going to quit smoking cigarettes. I'm going to start working out. And he's like, whoa. It's like, you're not going to do any of that shit. You're going to keep smoking. You're going to keep drinking a ton of coffee a day. And you're not working out. You're just going to come to meetings. And you're going to call me. I was like, you know, my crazy ass mindset. I said, this guy doesn't want me to quit smoking. Because he doesn't quit smoking. So he wants somebody to smoke with. That's the crap that went on in my brain, you know? So I dumped him as my sponsor. I was like, you're not good for me. So I said, I'm going to quit. So I quit smoking. I quit smoking cigarettes, and I was back out there getting high and drinking, and I stopped going to meetings. So that's what happened to me. And the crazy thing is I did that for like another year and a half. And some days I would be driving down the road where I used to go to the meeting, and I could see them out there with the styrofoam coffee cups and stuff. And I would hide my head. Like, they were going to see me and go, there he is, go get him, you know? And I was just like, that's a crazy, like, it's just like nuts, you know? But I would see them. Other things I would do is, like, I would drive around for hours and hours and hours. I used to drive around drunk. I used to drive around high because I had nowhere to go. I couldn't go home and do the stuff I wanted to do because, you know, so I would just drive. And I was driving all over the place. And I'm Greek. So we have our Greek Easter on Saturday night before Easter Sunday. We go to church, and then they light these candles. And you take the candle home lit. So you ever see, like, on a Saturday night, it's usually Greek Easter, which doesn't fall on regular Easter. You see, like, a bunch of people sitting in the car holding candles. They're freaking Greek. So sometimes when I was back out there using, I would be like driving around and be like, oh shit, it's Greek Easter. I'd be next to a car with a bunch of people holding candles and stuff. And I was like feeling like, oh my God, you haven't been to church in years. You're still getting high. You're still living at home. You're still drinking. Like I was like miserable. So, and this went on until October 9th, 1998. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I get woken up by this girl, Jen Wells. I went to high school with her. She's tapping me on the head with a pillow. And I look up and I see her. She's like, hey. I'm like, what's up? She's like, what the hell are you doing, man? I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, the first thought in my head was, how come I didn't lock my bedroom door? Like, if I would have just locked my bedroom door, she would not be in my room. So she looks at me and she goes, listen, I took your car keys. The mother wants you out, thank God. And you're going to come live with me. She only lived a couple blocks away. We went to high school together. I'm like, you know what? I just looked at her and I was just like, you know what? I'm done. I'm so done. my life was shit. I had to move on, you know. So I'm like, you know, as much as I really didn't want to move in with Jen, I did. So I got there, and so I moved in with her, and it was October 9th, and I had a meeting list. And because I just woke up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I wasn't ready to go to a meeting until like 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. So I found a meeting in Bayshore, which is in Suffolk County, and it was called The Pit. It was a midnight meeting. It happened every night at midnight. That's when they had this meeting. It was a rough meeting. You want to talk about? Listen, if you guys ever go to like late night meetings, it's a different crowd at 11 o'clock at night than 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, the 8 o'clock in the morning people, they have a much brighter outlook than the 11 o'clock at night people. But the 11 o'clock at night people, those are my people, you know. So I went to this pit, and Jen didn't take me, but another girl that I went to high school with, she was living there with her. Her name was Dina. She took me. And we went to that meeting every night for a month. I remember the first night I got in there, we got there a little early. There was a guy sleeping on a desk. First of all, he went to this basement. It was dark. It was gloomy. There's a dude sleeping there. He looked like he was a homeless guy, you know. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. It turns out he's the chairperson of the meeting. I'm like, I'm taking his inventory. I'm taking everybody's inventory. It's my first day. I'm like, you guys are all a bunch of freaking losers, you know. But I'm there, I'm doing my thing. I picked up a white chip. It's not a white chip, technically. In New York, they have a silver chip. It says 24 on it. And they say to you, if you want to make a commitment to yourself, not to anybody else, to not drink for 24 hours. I call it a 24-hour chip. So I picked up that 24-hour chip, and thank God it was the last 24-hour chip I ever had to pick up. Wasn't easy. Started that night. Did the first month, I did not get a sponsor. I did not get phone numbers. I didn't even want to be there, but I did it. So a month later, now things get, first of all, like the first 2 weeks, I realized I was in a lot of pain. Like once I got sober, every joint in my body ached, my back, my elbows, my knees, my ankles. I had so much like, well, because everything is now coming out of me. It's like I'm feeling everything. So I was just like, I was sleeping a lot. So like a month later, I told Jen, I said, Jen, listen, thank you so much. I'm going to go home. And I started going back to the same meetings I went to when I got out of rehab. And the first one I went to, there were two meetings in Seaford that I used to go to. I took a commitment to both of them. So on Monday, Wednesday, and Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I took commitments at all four of those meetings. So I was the guy who set up the chairs or cleaned up, or I was the greeter, or I was something else, you know, whatever, coffee commitment. Doesn't, you know, so I was definitely going. Then I was going to 7 meetings a week. I had a meeting to go to every single day, and then some days I go to even more. And in one Saturday morning meeting, I met this guy, Ben, and he became my sponsor. Something he shared, something he said, made me feel really good. And I said, and you know, he came up to me after the meeting, we talked, and I didn't ask him that day, but the next day or the next time I saw him, I did. And he was one of those sponsors that the kind of sponsor I am. He's like, you need to call me every single day. I don't care if you have nothing to say. I need to hear from you every single day. And you know what? We're going to set a time. You're going to call me every day at what time? You tell me. 5 o'clock? Sure. 5 o'clock. Boom. You're going to call me every day at 5 o'clock. And this guy, if you didn't call him at 5 o'clock, the next day, he would read you the riot act for like 20. It wasn't worth not calling this guy. You know, that was the deal. And you always had your big book. So he'd be like, okay, I'll turn to page 128, and we're going to read this, this, and this, and then we're going to talk about it. And I would sit on the phone with him for like hours, you know. So right around this time, my wife, who was then my girlfriend, who I've known since, you know, she's 16 and I'm 18, and we dated on and off, and that's a whole other thing. We ended up getting together, and she gets pregnant. And I'm like brand new in sobriety. You know, I'm new in sobriety, and And so we have a kid together. So now I'm trying to juggle that. AA, new AA, brand new AA. But you know what? My brain started to clear up. You know, I started feeling good about myself. I was still a liar, a thief, and a cheat, only I was sober. You know, I was still that person. I was still manipulative. I still did things that were bad, especially in the beginning. But at the same time, I was sober. You know, I was really sober. You know, I wasn't drinking. And you know what the crazy thing is when you first get sober is you realize your friends are not your friends. So I still wanted to, like, talk to my friends once in a while. But you know what? They didn't want to talk to me. Or they wanted to say, hey, listen, hey, you want to go out? You want to go drinking? Come on, I'll buy you a couple of drinks. You never wanted to buy me a drink before, but today we're buying drinks, you know? So, or I remember one time they wanted to take me for a walk. Oh, come on, we'll jump in the car, we're going to take a ride. And I'm like, you guys going to smoke that in the car? They're like, yeah, don't worry, you don't have to smoke. I'm like, you know what, I'm good. I'm like, so what, I'm going to be in the car with you guys while you're smoking weed or whatever? So I don't want to be part of that, you know? So those relationships went, they evaporated, you know? Except for that one guy, Andrew. He was still doing his thing, but I'd see him from time to time, holidays and whatever. And he was a good guy. He just couldn't put together any clean time. But I'll tell you a little bit more about him. I don't know how much time I got left in this thing. Good. So anyway, so I started. I got the wife. I got the girlfriend thing. I got the kid thing. I'm sober, going to meetings. AA is a priority for me. Until I stopped, I'm not saying stop working the program, but stop doing like the deep stuff, working these steps, calling other people, like going the extra mile to do more stuff in the program. So you get a little agitated from time to time, or you miss a few meetings, you know? In the beginning, for me, in the beginning, you know, I did it like every day because I was seeing the results. Once I was sober, I didn't have to, you know, I didn't feel like, I was like, oh, I'm good. Now, I'll do less of this and more of something else. Like I told you, I was in the restaurant business my whole life. My mom knew somebody that ran this computer school. I started taking these computer classes. It was like a 9-month program. At the time, it was called like Microsoft, MCSE, and then I got my Cisco certification. But I had to take these classes. But I remember sitting in that first class and looking around the room, and I was thinking to myself at the time, nobody in here is smarter than you. Like, they all look like they're deer in the headlights, just like me. Like, none of us knew crap about anything. But anyway, so I finished that. I actually got my first real job. Before that, working in the restaurant business in New York, your paycheck was an envelope with cash in it. I had no money in my Social Security fund, you know what I mean? Like, I had no on-the-books money. I never filed taxes. I'm like 34 years old. I'm filing taxes for the first time, that kind of thing. And, getting a check. I had health insurance. It was like all these freaking weird things that happened to me. I was getting on a train, working in Manhattan, just stuff like that. And, life was definitely getting better quick. Like, I was starting to see results of AA. And I just stayed sober. I kept going to meetings. I kept taking commitments. I kept, that sponsor, he ended up not being my sponsor. He's my sponsor for 2 years. And then I found somebody else. And then I found a whole support group of people. You know, back then, I don't even have a cell phone. It's like 2000, 2001, whatever. And I didn't have one. But, I had a notebook with a bunch of people's phone numbers in there. I go home and make phone calls, you know. I stayed connected to this program. I ended up moving in with my girlfriend, she was always my girlfriend, on and off. But we had a kid, bought a house. Like, now I felt really good. Like, oh my God, now I got my own place. Things are getting better. I was sober 6 years when I moved here to Virginia. When I moved here to Virginia, I went to my first meeting. And I didn't like it. Not that it was AA, but they run meetings a little differently down here than they do in New York. And I just didn't like it, so I went to a different one, and I was like, I didn't like that one either. So I was like, you know what, I'm 6 years into this program. I'm not going to go to AA. So like, I didn't go to AA for like 4 months, or maybe it was like 6 months. And so one day, Dawn, my wife, she says to me, she goes, how come you don't go to AA anymore? I go, because I'm good, I don't need to go. She's like, yeah, I think you need to go. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, I don't know, something about you, you know. You just, something's different, and you need to go to, why don't you go back to the meetings? And this was like 10 o'clock at night, or 9:30 at night, and there was this meeting in Virginia Beach. It's not there anymore. It was called the Late Nighters Group. It was an 11 o'clock meeting, and I met my next sponsor there. And yeah, his name is Mike Wood, and I met him on the steps of this place. And again, the late night meeting, that's my people. They're crazy as all hell. And I went to that meeting every day for the next like two, three years. It was 11 o'clock at night, and I get home at like, I can get home at 12:31 or 2:33. It was that kind of thing. Like, it depends on what's going on. We'll sit outside, we'll go to IHOP, we'll get some coffee, we'll talk. And I was back doing, I was good. I became a GSR, I got involved. I would go to intergroup meetings. I mean, I was really connected to this program, and I was feeling fantastic. You know, a couple of things I learned in this program. Would you say 8:45 around there? So one of the thing, couple of things I learned. You know, we hear all these different sayings in this program. One of them is, my disease wants me dead. My disease is in the parking lots, doing push-ups, sit-ups, whatever. But you know what? My disease does want me dead. But the first thing it wants, the first thing my disease wants, it wants me to be alone with my thoughts. My disease wants me isolated. You know, the two things that are going to take me out, everybody's different. But for me, is resentment and isolation. Because if I get alone with my disease, he's going to become my best friend. And he's going to tell me, he's going to rationalize every thought in my brain, and that's going to take me out, you know. I've been sober now 27 years, you know. And, you know, I go to this one meeting, this guy says, when you say your sobriety date, say, my permanent sobriety date is, and mine is 10-10-98. That's my permanent sobriety date. But at the end of the day, you know, like I said, my disease is always looking for a way in. You know how many times I think to myself, man, you've been doing this a long time. You can never go back to the way you were. A, you're too old to stay up for 3 days straight. B, you know, you would recognize if, you know, you started drinking and you started drinking too much. Now you can see the difference because you know the difference. That's my freaking disease. It's there. It wants in. It's banging on the door all the time. If I isolate, I help my disease get in, you know. And the resentment piece is the other thing. Let stuff go, man. And as I get longer into this program, I realize that, you know, there's, what's that saying? Someone always told me, goes, oh, don't sweat the small stuff, you know? But by the way, it's all small stuff. Every freaking drop of it. I never felt that way. Everything was a problem. Everything you did was a problem. And I had to like hold on to it. And I don't hold on to anything right today. Because today I'm working this program, and because of that, I'm able to not do all those things anymore. Or at least those things don't bother me anymore, you know? And, you know, I have a sponsor today. I have a God of my understanding, which has really helped me through these years. There's two great meetings I go to, a third step meeting and an 11th step meeting. Third step meeting is because even though I'm supposed to turn it over to God, a lot of times I don't, you know. But I learned how to pause longer than I used to. So if you learn how to pause before you make a decision, it really helps you out. So So for me, that really helped me out. And the 11th step meeting, you know, prayer and meditation, that's huge, you know. I used to just pray in the morning, oh God, thank you for this day. Oh God, please help me through my day. But now I think about, what am I going to do today? I'm going to go to work, or I'm going to go to some function, or I'm going to go somewhere. God, help me with these different things throughout the day. And then like I'm a little more specific with what I'm asking, you know, so. And then, so, you know, like I said, today's great, you know. You know, I got two beautiful kids that have never, ever seen me drunk, which is kind of cool. They see me crazy because I'm still me. And, you know, it is what it is. I tell you, in early sobriety, when I was very new, when my kid was, you know, still an infant, I remember going to, like, the grocery store. And, you know, my wife would be like, listen, grab a couple of pacifiers because I can't find them. I'm like, we got like 10 of these things around. I go, I know we got them, but I can't find them. I looked under the seat cushions, whatever. So I go into the Pathmark or, you know, go into the grocery store, and I'm like, that thing's like $6. Oh, hell no. That's going right in my pocket. So, like, you know, like, even in early sobriety, I was still a thief. You know, I was still a liar. I still did stuff that I shouldn't have done, you know. But I worked through all that stuff, you know, later on. You know, I figured it out. So, you know, it's a process. And today, not only are my kids grown up, one of my kids has got a kid who was born on my birthday. So I got a grandson now. So, you know, I wouldn't have had any of this stuff if it wasn't for this program. You know, this program saved my life. And every time I think to myself, oh, you know what? I'm ready to graduate, ready to take the tassel and move it over to the other side. Guess what? Somebody walks through that door, says, I had 20 years, 25 years, whatever. I drank, lost everything, and I'm back, and I'm looking to start over. That can happen to me. So guess what? I think I'm just going to stay because it's a lot easier to stay sober than to get sober. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, Chef.
Perfect timing, Aris. Thank you very much for sharing your story. That work, right? Get a sponsor, get a home group, get a commitment. Keep me out of my head. Do the work for all the promises that the program will bring. Great stuff, man. Thank you for sharing, especially after Thanksgiving, man. That was a great one. Appreciate it very much. Our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers donations to the church, supplies for the meeting. The rest is given to the Tidewater Intergroup, District 24, and the General Services Office. Are there any AA-related announcements? December the 13th. Smithfield, Ben's Church, 6:30 eating meeting, Gracious Living, got a flyer right here. Look, I'm going to have to make that down as we go along. If you'd like to come up here and get this one, this is a great meeting. I can assure you if you get out there for this meeting that you will not leave hungry by no means, and their speakers are great. So dinner is at 6:30, Ben's Church in Smithfield, David F. from Simple Action will be speaking at 7:30. Bring a dish if you wish. Any other announcements?
Hey, Carlos, alcoholic. Hey,
Carlos.
December 16th, the Bayside Sharing Today group is having their annual Christmas party, and we'll provide turkey and ham. Starts at 6:30 with a speaker starting at 8, so dinner from 6:30 till 8. And if you care to bring something to share, dessert or side dish or whatever, you're more than welcome. If you need any